are using AI for therapy and in some high-profile cases have died by suicide after confiding in chatbots. A survey by Common Sense Media finds 72% of teens have used AI companions at least once. With so many young people using this technology, what could and should be done to improve its safety? This is Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the research into AI therapy and whether the technology can be improved for teen safety are University of Cincinnati Professor of Clinical Psychiatry, Dr. Stephen Rush, and Beach Acres Vice President of Effective School Solutions, Dr. Carrie Bunger. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Bunger, why are teens and tweens turning to AI for therapy? What's the appeal of these AI companions and chatbots?
Well, first off, our young people naturally gravitate to technology and devices in order to receive, process information. And so the idea of utilizing ChatGPT or other types of AI, they're already using it for homework, whether they're supposed to or not. And so the idea of seeking advice in a mental health sphere, they're doing it already. So it's an extension of that in their comfort level. Access 24/7 as opposed to an in-person therapist. And the anonymity that comes with it and the increased ability to share things that you may not otherwise want to share with a parent or your friend or any other human being, you may be more willing to share on a device.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Rush, do you have a sense for how these apps work, what it's like to use a chatbot for therapy, just what the experience is like?
There really are two kinds of artificial intelligence that are used in as mental health tools, whether they are meant to be or not. But generally in research, we see that there are mental health, what are called chatbots, that are designed by professionals. So these aren't the big generative artificial intelligence tools that we all hear about, like ChatGPT. They're more like digital coaching programs, and they can, in a scripted manner, teach skills from therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy, offer exercises like journaling and mood tracking, sometimes can check in about symptoms of anxiety or low mood, but again, follow a very structured path, kind of like a self-guided workbook. And then there's generative AI tools like ChatGPT. And these AIs were not created as therapists. But we do know that many people, teens especially, treat them like one. This type of AI creates responses in real time based on patterns learned through its training and ongoing learning. The caveat, though, is that generative AI is built to produce agreeable responses that are validating to the people using the service. What we find is that people use them to talk out problems, to get advice about relationships or stress, to rehearse difficult conversations, and oftentimes to vent when they don't want to talk to someone that they know. Mm-hmm. So the chatbot experience is like working with a GPS, and the generative AI experience feels more like having a passenger in the seat telling you where to go, who mm-hmm. can also say anything else that they are so inclined to say.
Hmm. That's a great way to describe it. I want to note that we are going to be talking more about suicide. And if you are listening and you or a family member have any thoughts of self-harm or if you're in crisis, you can call or text the 988 Lifeline. I want to come back to this reference that I made earlier in the discussion, and that's two parents testified before a congressional committee earlier this year about their sons dying by suicide after they had confided their suicidal thoughts to AI. One boy was 14, one boy was 16, and one parent testified that their son confided in AI that he worried his parents would blame themselves if he did end his life. And this parent said ChatGPT told him, quote, "That doesn't mean you owe them survival." Dr. Bunger, what are your thoughts about that? What's your reaction to that kind of message that a young person could get from one of these apps?
My initial response is profound sadness. I also think about what Dr. Rush just said about the validation piece. And so when I first hear that response from ChatGPT, it's more of a validation of what the youth is saying versus constructive path forward. And so imagine if in that situation, immediately the parent was notified or 988 was notified, and it was a bot or AI where there had to be parent consent for the use and then notification. That young man, I can't guarantee that that young person would still be alive, but the parent would know that those statements were being made. And that's where I'm curious if there are ways that we can, with all technology and all evolution, we have to be mindful. And is there a way for us to have greater control and parent notification and to alert in those instances versus validate?
Yeah. Dr. Rush, what do you think? Would a constructive path forward be to have a way to immediately alert parents or another responsible adult if something like that comes up in one of these ChatGPT or AI conversations?
I think that is generally one of the greatest weaknesses of all AI used in mental health. In fact, there is, to my knowledge, one model that can do some risk stratification in terms of crises, but they're not trained, nor do they have the credentialing to deal with crises that might involve safety to one's person or safety mm-hmm. to somebody else. And so certainly a way to mitigate that is socially and responsible and appropriate.
We're talking about teens using AI chatbots for therapy. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So I want to talk to you both about how AI therapy differs from seeing a human therapist. Dr. Bunger, you were talking about kind of comfort levels mm-hmm. that teens might have with technology. They're mm-hmm. using it anyway, whether they're supposed to or not, for homework and that sort of thing. Is there a therapeutic value, though, in having human interactions that can have friction and be messier than a chatbot that's always agreeing with you, Dr. Bunger?
So to answer your question, I think really, honestly, that we have a crisis of human connection and that the result cannot be to replace human connection with AI. And so teaching our parents and caregivers how to connect with youth and be supportive in the way that youth want, which is to hear them out, to resist judgment and to be supportive and involved, to have a sense, youth to have a sense of belonging, to have a trusted friend. It's not about quantity of friends, it's quality of friends. And so when I'm thinking about AI, yes, it gives an opportunity for youth to share, like I said earlier, in a way that they may feel less stigma. It may provide opportunities for skills practice. But the idea of it replacing human therapy, human therapists, our social workers, and our counselors at Beach Acres, you know, really they thrive on the ability to have one-to-one face-to-face conversations, to use clinically indicated techniques, and to be able to read nonverbals in ways that the AI just absolutely can't. And so the way that I think about it and in speaking with therapists before this interview is that AI could be a resource but not a replacement for therapy, because ultimately our youth, our adults, we are interacting with other humans. So we need to figure out ways to how we can connect with one another. Yeah. So again, I see it as a resource, not a replacement.
What do you think, Dr. Rush?
I think there's also another side to this discussion, which is there are broader structural barriers to accessing mental health care and therapy. There's a global scarcity specifically of youth mental health services, where we have more than 50% of the adults in the United States with mental illness who receive no care. The access for adolescents and teens is even more limited. And digital tools do provide something that has a lower activation energy, if you will. It's less of an energy to seek help through an mm-hmm. online tool in a format that young people are already very familiar with because technology is really where they are doing a lot more than I ever did at their age. I do think that there are problems to be solved. A therapist brings something to the conversation that an artificial intelligence can, and that's things like real-time emotional understanding, the ability to notice subtle signs of distress, and the ability to step in when somebody is in danger. And I really would actually point to the World Health Organization's project on AI mental health work, which is specifically being developed for low and middle income countries, where up to 80% of people with common mental health conditions receive no care at all. Mm-hmm. And they would describe AI as a tool, but not a replacement for therapists. Mm-hmm.
Well, we will continue our conversation after a short break, and later in the program, how local cinemas are changing the game to bring people back to the theater. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about teens using AI for therapy and how to make the technology safer. My guests are University of Cincinnati Professor of Clinical Psychiatry, Dr. Stephen Rush, and Beach Acres Vice President of Effective School Solutions, Dr. Carrie Bunger. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. You know, as I mentioned at the start of our conversation, 72% of teens say they've used AI companions at least once. Dr. Bunger, you mentioned using these tools as a resource, not a replacement. What do you think that could look like?
I think it could look like asking advice that is not around like suicidal ideation or self-harm. I think it also is a valuable tool potentially for our clinicians, not as a replacement to their clinical judgment, but to assist with particular activities, skill building. It could also help with overall productivity of the clinician. Again, making sure that we are mindful of confidentiality within AI use, and ultimately it is the human being, it is the clinician that makes the decision. However, I do think that there's value with that for the clinician. And for the young adult, I do think that, as Dr. Rush talked about, more of the skill building or workbook digital practice could be very valuable with guardrails that if there is a statement of harm to self or harm to others, either 988 parent is notified, and that the parent is always involved within the use of AI.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Rush, what kind of clinical research has gone into developing AI therapy, effective AI therapy?
So there already have been dozens of clinical trials on mental health chatbots. Again, those are the very structured AI devices that will provide answers that are in some ways pre-programmed and are limited in terms of not being able to freeform have conversations. And in those studies, we see, including studies of young adults, that there's a small to modest effect size that when studying the use of cognitive behavioral therapy through an AI tool, people do feel less anxious and depressed after using them, and that those tools are generally safe in the short term, and they're also popular because they're convenient and private. And so the frameworks for how AI is being used for therapy right now is most commonly cognitive behavioral therapy, but there are other approaches such as behavioral activation and mindfulness, emotion-focused therapy, that they may be able to provide some use in.
Hmm. You mentioned that there have been some studies that include young people. I would imagine there must be a need for a different kind of research into AI therapy and how it affects children as opposed to adults. Do you think enough of that is going on, Dr. Rush?
I think that's one of the missing spots in the research that's being done. And again, would refer to the World Health Organization as a very large organization that is catching up to that. Kids and teens use technology very differently than adults. Their brains, emotions, and social worlds are still developing. So we can't study the use of any treatment in an adult and apply that to a child or an adolescent, because children or adolescents are not just small adults. We need to take into consideration the vulnerabilities that children have, their developmental needs, the privacy expectations, which I think is a very big concern around the use of AI in general, but then also their technology use patterns and their ability for emotional regulation. These are things that are unique to this population that really need to be focused on to ensure that if these are to be used as tools, they are both effective and safe.
Do you think clinicians could learn anything about how to connect with teens better, given that they prefer technology, Dr. Bunger? Is that something that you think could be an avenue for overall improvement?
I am not a therapist. I'm a school psychologist. I will share that I think it's helpful potentially within session to talk about what is appealing for that particular young person to utilize AI versus interaction with a human being. Also, ultimately, we want our young people to be able to be social with others. So it would be understanding why the technology is so engaging and modeling and practicing and offering feedback on that human-to-human connection. Mm-hmm. That would be, if I was in that situation, what I would be thinking about.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Rush, you know, we've talked about how young people are inevitably turning to AI therapy, either because they lack access to traditional therapy or they feel more comfortable with this technology. What is being done to improve the technology and make it safer for young people?
So researchers in the area of AI and mental health are working on improvements such as human-centered design. So the World Health Organization's human-centered design approach actually involves teens directly so that the tools feel relatable and that they are helpful. I think the research also shows us that building chatbots that mimic validated therapeutic relationship patterns, so mimicking a pattern that already exists between a person and a patient, that includes reflective inquiring, emotional mirroring, regulated turn taking. These are things that will make those tools better. But again, want to come back to their need to be built in safety SEBs. There have to be ways to flag harmful content or direct someone to real help. That is, I think, one of the biggest weaknesses of AI in this area right now.
Are you seeing companies make those pivots to try to include that in their technology, Dr. Rush, or is that happening?
So there, I had mentioned before that there is one AI tool that does some degree of safety screening, but again, most of the ones that are available right now do not. There is research going into how to program these AIs to respond to emotional or psychological crises. But I think the challenge there is that in a face-to-face interaction as a clinician, I may see subtle signs in a patient's body language or their lack or unusual eye contact. Small signs that an artificial intelligence isn't going to see, but may also not pick up from tone of voice. And so there certainly are limitations to what the AI can do independently. I think kind of going back to the statement that this is probably a tool to be used in the toolkit of mental health in a time when we have, you know, extremely high degrees of lack of access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dr. Bunger, how are counselors at Beach Acres advising parents if maybe their children are using these AI chatbots and feel very attached to them? I mean, we've talked mm-hmm. about the impact this has on teens, but what about what can be done to help parents who are kind of concerned or struggling with this?
So the answer is to proceed with caution and to have a certain level of parental oversight of use of devices, use of technology. And even with that, you're not going to catch everything, right? And the way that ChatGPT or others are set up, we don't necessarily have parent notification if these statements are being made. So having those clear conversations with parents and caregivers and also with the youth themselves, like, hey, if you said this or your friend says this, you may not be getting the answer that I, as your therapist, would give. So when you're feeling that way, here are the things to do and to safety plan around that. If you are feeling this way, talk to a trusted adult, talk to me, talk to your teacher, whomever, and then access the supports versus going straight to the bot in order to get the feedback, because it may not be what you're actually seeking.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Rush, do you foresee a time when this technology is going to be improved enough to really work for the greater good?
I would say there is a cautious yes. And I think that the research available supports a cautious yes. We're already seeing small in current studies, but real improvements in depression and anxiety. There is a very promising youth-specific programs like the World Health Organization's Global Chatbot, which I would say is focused on middle and low income populations, which really speaks to me of the correct motivation. And that's something to consider when we're looking at where these tools are coming from. We certainly have a stronger awareness of the risks than we had during the early social media era. And we're seeing a growing push to involve young people and clinicians directly in the design process. That human-centered design is probably a really critical component to making this both effective and safe.
Well, again, I want to mention if you or a loved one is struggling with a mental health crisis or having thoughts of self-harm, you can call or text the 988 Lifeline. Well, I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Professor of Clinical Psychiatry, Dr. Stephen Rush, and Beach Acres Vice President of Effective School Solutions, Carrie Bunger. Thank you both so much for your time today for this important conversation.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next, how local cinemas are changing the game to bring people back to the theater. This is Cincinnati Edition.